Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff, nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
Hello and welcome to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai, author of the book PTS Dog, Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder and the Service Dog. I hope you're tuning in to listen to enlightening, educational, and informative conversations about life with service dogs and the Americans with Disabilities Act. Thank you for tuning in to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog right here on DV Radio, WDVR. Welcome to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. I am your host, Joaquin Watai, author of the book, PTS Dog, Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder, and the Service Dog. This week, I am with New York Police Department Detective Roberto Oviedo, who has single-handedly battled for an initiative to train the world's largest police department in how to deal with complaints and issues and people who are using a service dog, disabled handlers and their service dogs. Roberto, thank you for joining me today.
Well, good afternoon, and I appreciate you giving me this opportunity to be on your show. I'm truly honored. Thank you.
The honor's all mine. I want to get a little bit into your background just so people can understand who you are and where you're coming from. You are a Marine Corps veteran, served during the first Gulf War.
That is correct. I served in the first Gulf War after my tour of duty. I went on to work for various law firms as a paralegal, and then ultimately joined the NYPD in 2003, where now I am a detective.
That's fantastic. What a neat career change. And you also are dealing with PTSD. You are a PTSD survivor, and you're training your service dog.
That is correct. And it's because of your book that gave me the inspirations to now teach the department the proper ways in dealing with PTSD and the service dog. So I'm making progress training mine. She's only 10 months, so she's not quite there yet, but I'm making progress.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. That's something. I mean, it is a process. It's step by step. You don't just flip a switch and bam, it's a service dog. You have to invest time into the dog in order to train the dog appropriately. And so it's good to see that people are taking that message to heart. I want to talk, before we get into your initiative with the New York Police Department, I really want to talk a little bit, and you and I have kind of talked, we've edged around this subject before, but I want to discuss compartmentalization and how, as a disabled veteran with PTSD, you are able to not necessarily overcome it as much as you were able to kind of compartmentalize your symptomology with PTSD and go to work and begin a successful career as a police officer and then a detective with the New York Police Department. What can you tell me about how that works? How is it working?
Well, I appreciate that question because it's a difficult thing that I had to go through. Basically, in joining the police department, you have to go through a variety of investigations and psychiatric background check. And it was hard for me to deal with, first of all, admitting the fact that I did have this this disability, which I don't really call it a disability. It's just a challenge that I have to go through. And with me, I had problems with anxiety issues, dealing with large crowds, being in large arenas, because I always had to watch my six, and there was always that anxiety issue. Mm-hmm. When I'm with the police department, of course, I'm with my brothers and sisters in blue, so I'm never alone. There's always people there to watch my back. So I can step aside from my disability and focus on the task at hand. So when people say, hey, you have PTSD, how can you become a cop? There's ways you can cope with it. And the way I cope with it was having my service dog. And she was instrumental in me keeping my job and keeping my sanity and keeping me in the right place to do what I had to do to get my job done. So that service dog since has passed. So I'm mm-hmm. training a new one, but I can't tell you how important and valuable it was to me to have a service dog. When people have to understand, she's just She's a tool for me to use. Mm-hmm. She's not only my pet, but it's hard to tell these people when I go out, you know, she's just, you know, an extension of me. And yeah. She helped me tremendously. So I owe it all to my service dog and keep me in focused and doing my job.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to assume and correct me if I'm wrong, but you did not request reasonable accommodation and you didn't take your service dog on the job with you. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah. And I personally, I would, if I were in your position working as a police officer and then a detective, I can understand fully why you would make that decision. Just the potential for harm to the dog alone is huge.
Absolutely.
You know, police dogs get shot all the time. A service dog with a police officer, there would be a lot of misunderstanding and confusion. I mean, I'm certain it could be done. However, sometimes you have to make a difficult choice in order to pursue a career. And you just got to suck it up sometimes, don't you?
Absolutely. You know, when I'm on my job, I'm focused. There's so many people, like I said, so many of my brothers and sisters in blue there to help me. And when I come home after a stressful day at work and seeing all the things that I've seen, there's nothing like coming home to your dog. And she was able to calm me down. And when I had these nightmares and anxiety issues, she was always there to, you know, hey, dad, snap out of it. Mm-hmm. And she does her things to bring me back to reality. And there's nothing like having a service dog to help you with those issues.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's another thing is, you know, on the job, you've got your partner, you've got other police officers around you, you know. So you're right. There's always somebody just like in a unit, you know, when you're on active duty, there are, I'm sure, probably tens of thousands of active duty service members right now who have PTSD or are dealing with PTSD and are still active duty and still performing their jobs and doing their tasks. It's very difficult. I was active duty when I was diagnosed with PTSD, and when they started pouring their medical cocktail into me.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was extremely difficult, but at the end of the day, I still did my job while they were working on my medical discharge. So it's doable, but then when you, I think I really respect what you've done in that you left the Brotherhood of the Marine Corps of the service and you found the Brotherhood in blue. And I think that's pretty awesome. Personally, I'm like, you're like one of my heroes. I'm like starry-eyed. I'm talking to a New York Police Department detective who's also, you know, a veteran, and he's doing these great things for disabled people. And I'm like, that is just pretty freaking awesome, you know? How well, cool was it? How
well, cool let me tell you something, Joaquin. I appreciate that, Joaquin. But let me tell you, it's your book. And I'm telling you, it's your book that inspired me to do what I do. Yeah, I cope with it. But in reading your book and looking at your experiences and what you have done to bring light of this topic is what inspired me to bring that to the police department and be an advocate and stress the issue to the training bureau to bring that as part of the training for these police officers when I was a field training officer.
Yeah, and let's talk about that. You, like I said, we've chatted often, you know, back and forth quite a bit. You had mentioned that there were a lot of police officers who just were not doing the right thing. So what were you seeing going on in interactions between police and disabled handlers that you felt needed to be addressed?
Absolutely. Well, I was a field training officer, walking the beat in the street. We have a huge mall where I work at in the South Bronx, and we got calls constantly by the managers or store security or sometimes the staff at various stores within the mall. So when we get to these calls, I will see the officers go and how they handle these calls. And the first thing they, without even thinking or asking, is you got to get the dog out of here. You got to get the dog out of here. Not even understanding, listen, the guy or girl says it's a service dog. Why don't you find out what's going on? Maybe it is a legitimate service dog. Now, if you see this dog acting, it's barking and being aggressive, you can see what's a service dog, what's not a service dog. But at one point, this dog was totally calm next to his handler. And unfortunately, the officer said, you have to leave the store. And that's when I said, you know what? Something has to change. And that's just one incident. And that's when I said, something has to change. There's got to be some type of policy and procedures to follow. Mm-hmm. So that's what got me upset and led me on my quest to get the ADA Act implemented in the patrol guide and mm-hmm. have these officers follow that.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, unfortunately, the ADA is a federal law and state and local police officers are just that, state and local police officers. Correct. And correct me if I'm wrong, you're the subject matter expert here, but you're trained to uphold state and local laws. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So, you know, you're not necessarily aware of federal laws such as the Americans with Disabilities Act, and through no fault of your own, unless you take the time to go seek out that information. It's not in the past has not been presented to the patrolmen when they're in training.
That's correct.
Okay. So you talked to the training. What did you call it? The training bureau.
Right. So the training bureau, Deputy Commissioner of Training, which is handles all the training to the officers that join the NYPD.
Mm-hmm. And they were already kind of, there was some idea or something was in the works when you contacted them. Is that correct?
That's correct. They were already in the works of presenting material for officers to deal with rules and regulations regarding the ADA. However, I stressed the fact about what about issues of the use of service dogs that has to be implemented and that we have to stress it because many of the people, the officers that around NYPD, you know, deal with getting these calls of people bringing dogs into stores. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to, you know, stress that and thank, you know, willingly, it's now part of the patrol guide and there is an actual whole paragraph of how to deal with service dogs. And that just made my day. It really did. I called you right away when that happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And a paragraph doesn't seem like a lot, but at the same time, when you're throwing as much information as being thrown at these guys while they're in training, it's got to be the training manual's got to be huge.
Absolutely. So what I did was I spoke with in front of roll calls when you got a day tour, a 4 to 12 or a midnight. Mm-hmm. I spoke to the troops at roll call of my experiences and how to act when they see someone with a service dog. My goal is to bring Layla to the roll calls and throughout the police department to every roll call in all the five boroughs mm-hmm. and stress the fact that, you know what, this is what a service dog does. This is how to act when you see someone with a service dog. So they can be aware mm-hmm. of when they go to these calls, what to look out for, what are the signs.
Right.
So that's my goal is to go throughout the five boroughs with my service dog and teach.
That's great. That's really cool. And you know, it's something I think one of the big issues is and you know it's big in the media right now and everybody's screaming bloody murder about all these fake service dogs. Look, folks, if you're listening and you're going, well, why isn't there a registry? Why can't we have some kind of proof? Listen, the dog's behavior. Bottom line, when you're standing there toe-to-toe with a police officer who's questioning your presence with your service animal in a business or a location, the dog's behavior is the proof in the pudding. The
Absolutely.
Proof right there is how that dog is behaving and how you interact and handle, and I can't stress this enough, this is a verb, handle, to handle. You are handling your service dog. That action, that active interaction between you and the dog and how that dog comports itself is what is the proof that it is a service dog. And you know, everybody screams about these you know, fakes in the stores that are yapping and peeing in the aisles and sticking their nose in it. Well, yeah, it's pretty obvious that's not a trained dog.
Absolutely.
You know, whereas those of us who have taken the time to train our dogs to perform in public the way they're supposed to, they don't do that. The dogs don't bark. They don't eliminate in the indoors. They don't stick their noses in meat displays. I mean,
absolutely.
I can't tell you how many comments I get when I'm grocery shopping and we're standing right next to, you know, we're standing in a big cooler full of hamburger. And Skeeter's just sitting there. He's not sticking his nose in there because he was taught not to. He knows if he behaves, he's going to get treats out, you know, later.
That's right.
And get rewarded for behaving. And that's called training. That's what you do, you know. It's really difficult. Now, I've got some specific questions because there's scenarios coming to mind. Obviously, one of the big ones is the store calling the police upset because somebody brought a dog in. That's pretty common, I'm sure, especially yes. in a city as large as New York. But I'm curious, how, let's say you have the victim of a crime who has a service dog. How would a police officer deal with bringing that person down to the precinct if necessary to get their statement, those kind of things with a service dog?
Correct. I mean, obviously, if you are a victim of a crime and you do have a service dog, correct. We are going to bring them into the precinct to interview. And the issue of having the dog should not be a problem unless, like I said, the dog is being very aggressive. The handler is not able to maintain that dog. But yes, the dog will accompany, which he should, the handler back to the precinct. And we'll be able to do an interview. So I don't think that's a problem. I don't think it's ever will be a problem, at least, you know, in my precinct. But there's occasions where that happens. Sometimes we need to bring you back to the precinct, and we have to, and I can't stress, we have to accommodate the service dog because we cannot separate that service dog from its handler.
Well, so
as long as we see the handler's handling his dog, mm-hmm. it shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah. And I mean, it's the same as, you know, if the person's walking in with a cane or rolling in a wheelchair.
Absolutely.
You know, it literally, under federal law, it's the same. I mean, the dog is classified the same as the wheelchair and the cane. It is durable medical equipment. And yeah, it's, You wouldn't take a man's wheelchair away from him to bring him into the precinct to make a statement. So, and that's what I was getting at is, you know, I wanted to make sure that, not that I'm looking to go visit New York and get mugged so I can go make a statement, but if it happened, you know, I visited New York a couple of times for Fleet Week in the 2000s, and it was wonderful. I never had a bad experience in New York City. Had a blast. So I'm not trying to talk down on New York City in any way, shape, or form. I had a great time. You know, you hear these stories. I mean, it's New York. It's a huge city. Crime happens. So you definitely hear these stories. So the bottom line is what you're making sure that the police force is trained is that, look, use some common sense. Look at the dog and its behavior. Look at the handler and how they're interacting with the dog, and make a common sense judgment.
Yes, it's all about common sense. And every precinct is equipped, you know, to have dogs in its precinct. You know, like in my precinct, I go above and beyond. I have, you know, food, I have treats for the dogs, because sometimes we get stray dogs, and we always accommodate dogs because we understand there are going to be individuals that have a need to have service dogs. So yeah, it's just use common sense judgment. Don't rush into judgment because the manager's telling you, I don't want this dog in my store. Mm-hmm. Use common sense judgment. And that's what I want to bring out throughout the NYPD. Our police commissioner is fantastic. And he's in total agreement with that too.
That's really good to hear. That's good to hear that. And you know, you're kind of in the front lines. You're on the front lines as far as dealing with the fraudulent people who are bringing untrained animals in and claiming their service dogs and demanding, you know, access. When that does occur, remembering that the ADA is a federal law, what resources do police officers in New York City have in regards to stopping this issue?
Well, there's several instances when we go to like one of these stores. And you know, let's use a small dog. Let's use like one of the Chihuahuas. Mm-hmm. That's the old grandma loves to bring that Chihuahua and claim it's a service dog, and he's going rampant and barking and screaming and going after everyone. Mm-hmm. Those officers have to use their judgment, and that's common sense judgment. Remove that lady from the store with that dog. Mm-hmm. But there are resources. You know, they can always call legal department. They can always call. We have canine officers that are very well knowledge with this type of situation. So mm-hmm. you know, the officers are protected. You know, by if they want guidance, that there's resources to call. In my precinct, they always call me, and I'll guide them. You know what to do, the steps to take. Mm-hmm. But there's always those people that want to use these fake animals and claim, yeah, it's my service animal, but they're not.
And this well, and that's you know. It's not the animal that's the problem now. You can't be a fake dog. You're either a dog or you're not. You know, if you're a cat in a dog costume, it's pretty obvious. But it's the people who are claiming the untrained dogs are service dogs that are the issue. And, you know, and it really comes down to, look, you could potentially remember that you have to be disabled in order to be protected by the Americans with Disabilities Act. That's why it's called the Americans with Disabilities Act. Okay. First of all, so you could be disabled and claim your dog as a service dog, but your dog does not meet the requirements under the ADA. It's not calm and focused. It's barking. It's causing distraction. It's peeing in the aisle, you know, whatever. You know, at that point, it really doesn't matter whether you're disabled or not. If you choose to exercise the right to use a service dog to assist with your disability that has been individually trained to do so,
right,
then you have the responsibility that goes along with that right to make sure that that dog fulfills the requirements of the Americans with Disabilities Act. It is under your control at all times. And if it is not under control, you are taking immediate effective action to regain control. It is trained individually to perform worker tasks to assist you with your disability, and it's housebroken.
Could not have said that better myself. I agree. That's 100%.
That's the rules. And if you can't, if you are not able to meet those responsibilities, then your dog, you do not have the protection to take the dog that does not meet those standards into anywhere. And it's something, and listen, I'm sorry to throw these kind of things at you, but people need to understand something too. The way the ADA is written, there are three titles. Titles 2 and 3 deal with public access, and titles 2 and 3 are the ones that deal with service dogs in public places. And you need to understand that although it is a federal law, it directs state and local law enforcement or businesses or facilities such as museums, the courthouse, police stations. Those all fall under Title III of the Americans with Disabilities Act. So those facilities are required to accommodate disabled people with service dogs. It's kind of funny. It's something that rubs veterans a lot the wrong way is that, you know, the federal government, being the federal government, exempted themselves from the ADA. They fall under federal facilities, fall under the Rehabilitation Act of 1973, most notably the VA.
The VA hospital, correct?
However, state and local facilities and businesses open to the public fall under the ADA. And so really, you know, I'm curious, and I don't think either of us have an answer to this, but I'm really curious why in that language, in the writing of the ADA, there was not some sort of, I mean, they require local code enforcement to make sure that things like, you know, ramps on sidewalks, wider doorways, you know, travel ways that are wide enough for wheelchair to access are there. But there's no requirement for state and local governments, in other words, the police department, right, to ensure that service dog access is being observed correctly. And that's kind of I don't know if that's an oversight. I don't know if the way the ADA is written, because service dogs are classified as durable medical equipment, if they feel that, right, that the law, it backs that up perfectly fine, because it's the same requirements as with a cane or with a wheelchair.
Right. That's a good point. I don't even have an answer to that either.
Yeah. I mean, I'm curious.
That's a good point.
And honestly, if I had a time machine, I would love to go back and just sit in the room where the people who were developing the Americans with Disabilities Act were writing it and discussing these things. I'd really be curious to understand the thought process. I guess I kind of answered the question in that, like code enforcement is who checks and makes sure the doorways are wide enough and that the ramps are, you know, the right angle and there are rails in the bathrooms and all of that.
Right, right, right.
So perhaps it's an oversight on local code enforcement that they're not going to the management of a business or facility and asking, okay, how do you deal with service dogs? Maybe that's where the training needs to come in from a state and local level in order to ensure the enactment of the federal law or the enforcement of it.
I agree with that. Exactly. It's one thing to put a sign on your door, or your establishment saying, you know, yeah, no dogs allowed. However, service dogs are, mm-hmm. but you know, they have to be more to it than just a sign on your door. It's how Absolutely. Do you deal with accommodating an individual with a service dog in restaurants, for example? You know, how do you accommodate that? Some restaurants yeah. are great. They have an actual space designed for people with service dogs.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I don't necessarily, I'm of two minds about that. Personally, when I go into a restaurant with Skeeter, which is every time I go into a restaurant, I look for a place where he's going to be out of the way because he's a big dog.
Yes, he is.
You know, and I trained him to block behind me when I'm eating at a restaurant because the reason I just did not train him to tuck under the table is because in a loud restaurant where it was just, it was packed, it was loud, I could not hear, you know, one of my portions of disability is hearing loss, too many years on aircraft carriers at a naval air station. And I can't hear in loud rooms. I cannot hear you sitting across from me talking to me. I have to watch your mouth move. I can't hear you. And a waitress came up behind me and put her hand on my shoulder. And I rose up ready to swing. I almost decked her.
Oh, wow.
I realized, wait, I'm safe. I'm okay. I'm not under attack. You know, PTSD, right. Hypervigilance, right? You know, walk yes. up, find somebody who's always on edge, put your hand on their shoulder. They're going to pop you in the nose.
I can relate, my friend.
You know, and so I realized, look, I can't, it's not safe for other people for me to be in that situation. So I taught Skeeter to lay behind me. When there's a 100-pound Malamute laying behind me, the person has to come around to approach me. The problem with that, though, is what does a floor space in a restaurant look like?
Right.
So, you know, perfect example. I went to an Olive Garden and they had booths that were on a raised dais. And it was, there was no way I could even if we weren't sitting in the booth, Skeeter wouldn't have got under there with the legs of the table. It just wasn't practical. So I had to lay him in the aisle and he was causing a traffic. He was blocking traffic.
Yeah.
And I asked the waiter, the hostess to seat us out of the way. And she stuck us in this booth where he's blocking the aisle. And the manager came and said, I understand that he has to be here, but can we get you to move somewhere where he's not in the way? And I looked at him and said, I asked to be seated out of the way. So they moved us into the corner of the, you know, they have the one big long table that like 30 people can come for a birthday party. It was yes. the middle of the day, it was lunchtime. They stuck us back there in the corner and it was beautiful. It was perfect. It was quiet. There was no, I could see all approaches. Skeeter, you know, was to my side. So the waitress had to come from one side only where I could see her approaching, you know, it was perfect. I was like, this is great. So, you know, but, you know, then you got to think about it too. Especially in cities like New York, where you have buildings that are 150 years old, it may not be physically practical to make certain floor space exist. There's a give and take when you're a service dog handler.
Yeah, it's a challenge here in New York City, and not only the space, but the challenge is to have these people keep telling these people, "I'm sorry, you cannot pet my animal. She's working." And they look at me like I'm arrogant and I'm ignorant. And that's how I look at them. You're ignorant. You're arrogant. Can't you see she's working? It's not that I want to be rude and she doesn't want to be rude, but she is working right now. And that's my problem is telling these people, do not distract her. And, you know, I could put all the patches I want on her. Don't distract service dog. It's just simple. Don't mess with my dog when she's working.
That's, you know what? That's a great point. And when we come back from this short break, we will discuss it. You are listening to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. I'm here with my guest, Roberto Oviedo, a New York Police Department detective and a champion for disabled service dog handlers. We'll be right back.
DV Radio.
Ever shop online at smile.amazon.com? Why not give back to the DV Farm by making it your charity of choice? No extra fees or hidden costs, and a portion of your purchase goes directly towards the DV Farm, located in Gilsum, New Hampshire, and helping to continue its mission. That's smile.amazon.com, and be sure DV Farm is your charity of choice. For more information about the DV Farm, please go to dvfarm.org.
Do you love bacon?
Yeah!
Do you like guns?
Yeah!
Mom, I want my cheesy boost. Yeah, god damn it!
Do you love America?
Damn right you do! You crazy bastards that keep freedom ringing need to get over to mydvstore.com now!
Are you looking for veteran resources and peer support? Objective Zero has an app for that. Download the Objective Zero app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Access wellness resources like yoga and a free year subscription to Headspace, the world's most popular meditation app. Check out veterans resources and access our nationwide network of peer support. Speak to fellow women veterans or someone in your field and branch of service. You get to choose who you want to chat with. Learn more at www.objectivezero.org. That's www.objectivezero.org.
And welcome back to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. I am your host, Joaquin Watai. You are listening to the Service Dog Show on DV Radio, WDVR. If you're interested in any other shows, there's a couple. Of course, the flagship program, Barracks Talk, which airs on Saturday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern. The Marquee Dirty 30 airs 30 minutes before that on Saturday evenings, 8:30 p.m. Eastern with Marquee Davis. And that's always a good listen. Marquee talks about issues in the news, talks about – I'm telling you, if you have the chance to listen to the Marquee Dirty 30, either when it's aired or on the podcast, check it out. It's worth your time to catch up with Marquee and see what's going on in his little – corner of the world. I am here with New York Police Department Detective Roberto Oviedo. Roberto, thanks for sticking around to do the rest of the show. When we left for break, we were talking about how frustrating it is dealing with the general public when we're out working our service dogs.
Yes, very frustrating. And thank you for the opportunity. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. So, I asked this question during the break, and, you know, look, we are veterans, and we talk veteran talk, and so you're a detective with the New York Police Department, so you are armed at all times. How many times have you just been ready to draw down on somebody who will not stop trying to pet your service dog?
I tell you, man, to be honest, I'm tempted 90, 95% of the time to do so. It's just so goddamn frustrating, man.
And it's, you know, I've seen people, I did a post a couple days ago about, you know, leave my service dog alone, back off kind of thing. And somebody suggested carrying a squirt gun or a spray bottle and spraying them and saying no every time they reach the dog. And that would be hilarious. However, I do not recommend it. And I have a police officer on the show who can probably agree with me in a lot of ways and places that could be considered assault.
Yes, I do not recommend doing so.
It's funny. It's a great idea. However, it could be trouble. So don't do it. But it is a funny idea.
Yes,
just like, you know, the cat trying to get on the counter. Psst, no. Can I pet your? Psst, no. No, we don't do that. We don't do that. What do you do? What do you do when they won't stop?
And it's me personally, when I would go to the malls, that's the test. The ultimate test is taking her to the malls and having these kids walk up to your dog. Can I pet? Can I pet? And constantly telling them she's working. No, she's working. Then their parents start getting upset. Then my anxiety starts going to the roof and she starts giving me these signals. Dad, let's get out of here. Let's get out of here. So, I mean, you could just keep telling them, but at some point they just don't get the hint. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately with me, I want them just, let's get out of here. And I leave.
Yeah. Yeah. That is definitely counter to the whole purpose of having a service dog, which is to give you the independence and the ability to go to do something like go to the mall. And it makes it very, very frustrating when we're dealing with the general public. If I were in your shoes, you know, Layla's, for people who don't know, Layla's a German Shepherd. I'd just flash my badge and be like, she's working. Like, it's, you know, hey, it's a police dog. You know?
I've done so. and they back up.
I'm sorry.
I've done that in Rite Aid.
I don't blame you. I you know what? Hey, if it's a tool you can use in order to get what you need to do done, by all means, you know, that's funny. And again, folks, listen, we are not advocating for people to train their service dogs in protection. That is not a good idea. Although it's not illegal, it is heavily frowned on by the Department of Justice because of the liability. Don't do that. We're just, you know, we're talking about methods of dealing with intrusive people when we're trying to work our dogs.
Right.
You know, and another, and you're right, man, patches that say stop, do not pet, you know, service dog working, no eye contact, no, you know, all those patches, man, you could put a neon blinking sign tied to a, you know, a blimp that's floating 3 feet above the dog's head that says, leave this dog alone. And somebody's going to walk up and say, can I pet your dog?
Guarantee it.
And that's just, I don't know, other than slapping him on the forehead with a, you know, a label that says you're an idiot. I don't know that there's a solution other than education, other than what we're doing right here, right now.
That's why this is so important for me to bring this to the police department as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, now I don't know, in some states, such as North Carolina, where I live, it is actually a misdemeanor. It is a criminal offense. It is a misdemeanor offense to interfere with a working service dog. Is there a law like that in New York?
It's the same thing. It's the same. But you know what? The laws here in New York are more lenient. It's basically, you know, hey, basically a slap in the hand. But of course, if you do harm to that animal, then we have strict laws regarding anything being done to animals, regardless if it's a service animal or not. Mm-hmm. We got strict laws on that, on animal abuse.
Mm-hmm.
But some people just need to be guided. Some people just need to learn and not to do so.
Yeah. Well, and it's and listen, the other aspect I wanted to bring up with you, because you're there, you live it, you're in the Bronx. The cultural diversity of a city like New York, where I can walk in with Skeeter in one part of the city and people would be like, that's a service dog. And I could walk into a restaurant, say, in another part of the city. And I personally happen to be a really big fan of Thai food. So I might walk into a Thai restaurant where dogs culturally are completely different.
Oh, yeah.
Than dogs are in American culture. And so I'm not only dealing with the misunderstanding as far as the ADA is concerned, but I'm dealing with cultural misunderstanding. You're trained to deal with this, with these cultural differences and with these issues. So, you know, walk me through how you deal with a scenario like that.
Yeah, it's so difficult. It's basically teaching these establishments about, you know, the rules and regulations of the ADA. Me, I think I stated a few shows ago, is I actually walk around with the ADA cards.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually, when I get challenged, I'll hand it to them and then they get a different light. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And that'd be the end of it. Mm-hmm. But it's basically education. We need to bring more education to these residents. And it should be the new, it should be a new procedure when they go apply for licenses with the New York State Liquor License Authority. That should be a mandatory training as well. And I'm hoping to implement that as well.
Oh, that would be fantastic. That it be part of the liquor license or restaurant license. Does the liquor board do the restaurant licensing too?
Yes, they do.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's a great initiative. That's a great thing to pursue is, look, if you're going to apply for a license, you need to make sure you understand and are compliant with these laws.
Correct. Bam,
here, you know, here's the ADA. And the ADA has already produced the materials. You know, you're not doing anything but printing something that already exists. It's not like it's going to cost, you know, a committee to sit down and write new rules or anything. It's already there.
Yes, that's correct.
Putting it at the state and local level, putting it into the hands of those business owners. And that's, I think, something, again, and I keep going back to the thought, why isn't code enforcement making sure service dog is enforced? You know?
Right. We need these businesses to know and have training to the staff regarding the people that have that walk into their establishment with service dogs. That's where we got to make a phone call, write a letter to the Department of Health.
Yeah,
it should be mandatory training, how to properly deal with someone with a service dog.
Well, and not to, you know, not to promote myself in any way, shape or form or anything, but what a great opportunity for disabled people who may have very limited incomes, who aren't able to work, but they use a service dog and they know the ADA because it's their livelihood. I mean, this is, you know, using this dog is why I'm alive. What a great opportunity to go for, you know, $150 speaker's fee or whatever, and go teach these people, bring the service dog, show them this is how it should, you know, how the dog should behave, how you should behave around the dog.
Yes.
What an awesome opportunity, an educational opportunity for those people, if they're so able and if they're so inclined. And that, you know, I think a lot of us handlers, such as yourself, such as me, we find ourselves in a position of being forced to educate because nobody else is.
Correct. And that's I promote your book everywhere I go. I'm telling you, I hate to keep saying it. And, you know, but Joaquin, your book is invaluable. I keep one in my office and I keep one here at home. And people, it's like you said, if they can just get someone like yourself to go out there and speak, mm-hmm. that speaks volumes, my friend, volumes.
Well, and it's something, and you know what? And especially with PTSD service dogs, look, trust me, I've been there. I've stood with a microphone in front of me and Skeeter at my side, and I couldn't have done it if Skeeter wasn't right there. It's not easy. We're trying to overcome anxiety, social isolation, panic attacks, you know, these are all PTSD symptoms. But when you spend the time and work with your dog and go through the process of training your dog, the process starts to give you the tools to be able to deal with those things in a productive manner. And it doesn't cure it. I still have anxiety attacks.
Oh, yeah.
They're shorter, they're less. And usually he warns me before it gets bad and I can and redirect. I can either focus on him because he'll act a fool to get my attention to get me to stop. You know, Skeeter will be a complete knucklehead if it's what it takes to get me to stop spooling up.
Well, he's doing his job. That's good.
Exactly. He's doing his job. You know, he'll act plain ignorant. He will act ignorant. He'll dance around. He'll be goofy. He'll punch me in the knee. You know, he just, Dad, stop. Look at me. Focus on me. But and I start to calm down because I'm talking, Skeeter, what are you doing? Skeeter. And then I start thinking, oh, what am I doing? Why is Skeeter doing this? You know, it's that give and take. It's that interaction that you get through the process of training your dog because you learn your dog and your dog learns you.
Correct. It takes patience. It takes time. I mean, it's everyday training and I'm still working on it. But it's people just don't have service dogs overnight.
No. And it's not. And it's, yeah. And that you're absolutely right. They don't. And that's something, it is not a push button turnkey thing. It's not cookie cutter training, especially PTSD. I mean, sure. Yeah. Seeing eye dogs, there are very rigid training requirements and standards for a very specific reason. Absolutely. And there's a place for that. However, a PTSD service dog or any other psychological service dog, autism service dogs, the patient, the client, if you want to call them that, the handler needs to be personally involved in the training of that dog, because part of the effect that the dog has on the handler is the process of training the dog. Gives you something new to focus on, new things to think about that take your mind away from the things that might affect you in your surroundings, speaking from a PTSD perspective. And it gives you a new job. Instead of being a PTSD sufferer, your job becomes a service dog handler.
Correct.
You know, and you're focused on handling your dog. I mean, when I go out, I don't worry about it's been 6 long years of working day in and day out with my dog. You know, when I go out, I don't think, okay, where are the exits? Check my 6. I don't look at that anymore. It's not there anymore. I worry about, okay, is Skeeter focused? Is he ready to go? Did I potty him? Do I need to potty him? Do I have, potty bags in his leash? Make sure he's good. If it's pouring rain, how close can I park? Because he's a dog. He's going to be wet and he's going to shake. And I don't want him to walk into the you know, produce section and shake and soak the produce section, you know, things like that. I mean, your whole mindset changes to handling your dog and you stop all that other stuff. It's still there, but you're not focused on it anymore. So it's not running you anymore.
Absolutely. And that's a successful relationship between a handler and a service dog. Because when I go speak, people look at me, what do you mean? You're a detective. What do you mean you have PTSD? There's ways to cope with it. And having a service dog is my way of coping with it.
Absolutely.
And, you know, people just have to understand that. I focus on my dog and that's my job. And she focuses on me. And together we're a team.
Yeah. And you feel it's like puzzle pieces. You fit, you know, she fits in where you're missing, you know, you've got a blank and you fit in where she's got a blank, you know, and that's, it's so hard to, it's hard to explain. It's hard. Now, listen, I'm going to ask you some very first responder specific questions because it's something, it's not part of the national conversation, if you will, about PTSD and mental illness. You, as a police officer and as a detective, see some very horrible things.
Unfortunately, yes.
As horrible, if not more horrible, than the things that you saw in war. What kind of support do you, police, now take off the Marine veteran hat, put on the police hat. What kind of support do you guys have available to you? I see all these organizations who train service dogs for veterans.
That's a great question. Great question. And there is support for us. We have early intervention. We have PAPA. We have
PAPA's an acronym. What's it stand for?
It's let me try to see. Police Officers Peer Assistance Program. PAPA. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then we have early intervention and we have COPE. These are they're agencies to help. A lot of officers think, oh, I'm going to get jammed up. No, you can call them. Sometimes you can become anonymous, confidential, and they will help you. So we have programs that was implemented by the police commissioner, James O'Neill, and he advocates on that. He even put a public announcement to all of the police officers on how to deal with stressful situations. For example, the last stressful issue that I went through was when we had the active shooter at one of our hospitals called Bronx Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
That actual shooter, I ran in that building, ran up the stairs and actually seen the active shooter.
Mm.
Thankfully for me, our emergency service unit intervened and they were able to take care of that situation. But that ordeal gave me the flashbacks of being in combat.
Mm-hmm.
So there's ways we can, there's resources we can use in NYPD. Like I said, early intervention, COPE and PAPA, where we can reach out to our peers and get the help that we need.
That is fantastic to see. And you know, again, New York Police Department, largest police department in the world. You know, when you get out in the edges, out in the boonies, out here in, you know, North Carolina, nothing against North Carolina, but it's smaller. There's smaller population, smaller police forces. Doesn't mean the crimes are any less gruesome.
Right.
You know, so it's something I'm concerned about and something I think that as an author and as a voice in the community, I want to start thinking about and looking at is, look, we do all this stuff for veterans, but we have police veterans walking around amongst us day in and day out who see things just as terrible, experience things just as awful, get shot at, get attacked, the things that you guys have to deal with. I think, you know, you deal with the absolute worst of humanity. You know, we need to address that in our first responders, in our police, our firefighters, and our EMTs. They're the people who clean up the mess. And that's traumatic.
Yes, you know? Yes.
And I think it's something we need to look at as a nation. It's not just the veterans who deal with this. And it's not just police or firefighters who deal with it. Anybody can get PTSD. Don't get me wrong, listeners. But this is a large portion of the United States population involved in law enforcement, firefighting, and EMT work, first responders,
right,
who just don't necessarily have the same degree of support that veterans do and should.
I agree with you. A lot of people think, oh, You need to be in combat to have PTSD? No.
No, it and that's just it, you know. And that's why I don't like terming it PTSD sufferer. No, you are a survivor. PTSD is what lets you survive. It is your brain's method of providing the strength to deal with overwhelming issues and keep you alive.
Correct.
The problem is it changes your brain and it doesn't change back. That's where it becomes a disorder.
Right. It's not a weakness too. It's
no,
not a weakness.
No, absolutely
and
not.
I keep stressing that. You know, you're not weak. It's not a weakness to have PTSD. It's something you got because of you did what others wouldn't do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's how I see it.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. Well, man, I'm really excited to be able to talk to you about this. I will tell you right now, if the NYPD ever wants to do, you know, conferences or any kind of a big educational thing where they want to bring in guest speakers, I'm volunteering. I'll be glad to come to New York and speak to the NYPD about service dogs anytime.
Well, that's fantastic. I'm going to try to make that happen.
I really would. Not only because it would just be a great honor to be able to address the NYPD, but I do enjoy visiting New York. God bless you for living there, man. I couldn't do it, but it's fun to visit. So
yes, you're always welcome. We got Yankee Stadium. Come on down.
You betcha. You know, I before they knocked it down, I got to see the Crosstown Classic in Mets Stadium.
Oh, okay.
That was a blast. Except for, you know what? I am going to say that I'm holding you personally responsible because you're a New Yorker. I'm in Mets Stadium. I'm watching the Crosstown Classic and the hot dog vendor comes up and I'm excited. A hot dog in New York, in a stadium, at a ball game, and it's wrapped in Wonder Bread.
Oh, no.
What is up with that?
That's a crime.
I'm telling you, at least it only had mustard on it. I'll give him that. But it was Wonder Bread, not a hot dog bun. What's going on here?
Yeah, Nathan was like, we do it right at Yankee Stadium, man.
That's what I heard. All righty, man. Thank you so much for joining me on the Service Dog Show. Where can you now? You are a member of Black Sheep Bravo. So tell people about how to find you and check in on what's going on at Black Sheep Bravo.
Sure. You can join us at our roundtable show every Friday night at Black Sheep Bravo. You can go on our Facebook page. You can like us on Facebook, subscribe to our YouTube page, and just me and a bunch of veterans talking for an hour, just bringing smiles to our veterans' faces and giving resources. That's what we're all about. Veterans helping veterans. And I appreciate you letting me plug that show.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, folks, that's it for this edition of the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. Great big thanks to Detective Roberto Oviedo of the New York Police Department for everything he's doing on behalf of disabled service dog handlers in his great city. We will see you next time right here on DV Radio. WDVR. Oh, yeah.